This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Let me tell you something, guys. Don't ever tell your wife to get you wine while she's at Walmart.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Lord.
This is the second week that I've made this mistake. And I will not make it again. Now, granted, it does the job, but it's not very good wine.
Yeah, they got some of the standard stuff that you can get at the grocery store there.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyways, the one that I like is Gnarly Head. It's not very expensive, and it's really, really good. And it's got a cool, like a tree with an afro on it. I don't know. That's what it looks like.
A tree with an afro?
Yeah. That's what's called Gnarly Head, dude. Anyways, this is the Aftershock Central Podcast. What is this, episode 4, I believe?
Four-ish.
I'm Martin. Ronnie is here. Jack is here.
Hello.
And we're going to party.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not really. We're going to talk about comics.
You know, it's really ish episode 5.
I guess, yeah, it is episode 5. We just have a...
Counting the secret file.
Yeah, the secret file. You mean the non-recorded file? Yeah. We might need
to find a new app. The Black Eyed Kids stole it.
The Black Eyed Kids stole it. As I look at the app now, this is the new version, so I wonder if the new version fixes all this crap that's been wrong the past few weeks. Anyways... Ronnie was out last week. Well, actually, I guess that'd be the week before now, because we didn't have time to record this past week too much. That's why this episode's coming out late. Mm-hmm. But I think that's okay, because we're going to start talking about new books as they come out. And, you know, maybe having a few days to get people to read the books is okay.
Right.
So this week we're going to be reading the debut issue of Captain Kidd number 1. We also have American Monster number 4 and Black Eyed Kids number 4. What does it feel like Black Eyed Kids would have more than 4 issues? I feel like I've read like 10. But I know that's not true.
Technically there's 5, right?
It's true. Counting Genesis.
Counting Genesis, you're right. Which,
well, 4.5, I guess. 4.5.
That was a pretty meaty intro story, though.
Genesis, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Genesis was great.
Yeah.
Because Alters is in that one, too, right?
Alters is in that one. Although,
when is that coming out?
I don't know. Let's see what Aftershock says.
Alters number 1, I believe, comes out in October, I believe.
Oh, that's a ways off.
I thought I saw that on the old Twitter machine.
The next one up is Animosity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's next week.
Oh, nice. Yep, you're right. August 3rd.
Yeah, that looks really good.
Yeah, I'm excited
for that. Are you checking on comicarc.com?
No, I'm actually checking on Aftershock's website because I want to make sure that they haven't made any last-minute changes to the schedule.
Gotcha.
it's not like that's happened in the past.
No, never that.
But in September? Sure. Is that what you saw?
For what?
Altered, yeah, September.
September is number 1, and then October is number 2, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll see. Because what I've seen after they announced it is not like what I've seen in the preview. So, and I think we talked about that a little bit.
Right, yeah.
Might have been off the air, too. But anyways, so let's get cracking. I think we're going to start off with Jack's favorite book.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Kidd.
Do we need a spoiler alert?
No, we don't need to do a spoiler alert.
Kind of obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, right? I mean, we're going to talk about these books. So if you haven't read them, go ahead and read them. If you want to listen to our discussion either way, please continue. Captain Kidd number 1 is written by Mark Waid and Tom Payer. I hope that's how you pronounce his name. Co-creator, co-writers, and then Wilfredo Torres on art, Kelly Fitzpatrick on colors, and A Larger World on letters, which I believe A Larger World is Dave Sharp.
It
Okay.
You know, Dave Sharp from Valiant?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is he the one? He's doing the one, he's doing Archer and Armstrong, yeah?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so that's a larger world. Okay. Who wants to kick off the discussion on this one? Or am I kicking it off?
I think you are.
Oh, right.
You're the pro.
I don't know about that. I think Ronnie's a pro.
I don't know about that.
So, Captain Kidd is a story about a 45-year-old, mid-40s. He is, they said his exact title, but he works for a newspaper. And the story kicks off with this character at a bar with his friends. And I guess really just one friend, because the other person's a waitress.
Yeah, Bill.
Bartender.
Yeah, the bartender. And they're celebrating his birthday, and he's just not very excited. They pretty much crack old jokes at him for a good third of this issue. And as this odd character shows up and shoots him with a gun that makes him want to go to the bathroom.
Right. Interesting.
A very interesting
choice of weapon.
Interesting choice of weapon. So he goes to the restroom, and this girl intercepts him. We'll learn a little bit more about her later on in the issue. And he pretends like he doesn't know her, but she seems to know exactly who he is. And he decides that it's time for him to go home. So he gets his stuff and leaves the bar, leaving behind his friends and birthday presents. With some more old
people. So is he pretending not to know her, or does he not know her?
The impression I got by the end of the issue is that he does know her.
That he does? Okay.
Yes, he does. But that he thinks she doesn't know who he is in his real life, not his superhero life. Because here comes the twist. So the twist is this gentleman might be a 45-year-old man, but his superpowers are like reverse Shazam. So yeah. Instead of a kid turning into an adult with superpowers, it's an older gentleman. And I don't want to say old because he's about Ronnie's age. just kidding, Ronnie. sorry, I had to get that in there. Although I guess Jack's older than you, so.
Yeah. Hey. I thought we weren't going to remember that.
Oh.
Just keep making fun of Ronnie.
Oh, we remember. So anyway, so his superpower is he becomes kind of like a, it's almost a Superman, but I saw it more. Have you guys read Invincible?
I have not.
Yes.
You haven't read Invincible?
Yes.
I haven't.
Oh my. Jack, I thought you were an Edge fan. Anyways, it seems to me more like that, like it's kind of a Superman type, but not quite Superman. He's obviously has super strength. He can fly. He can sense radio waves. I'm not sure.
Definitely younger than Superman. Looks like he's about 20-ish.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So he becomes a lot younger, at least half his real age.
And he loses his buzz.
He does.
He changes.
I guess as part of his superpowers, he completely regenerates himself.
Yeah.
And I guess that gets rid of the buzz, which is kind of fun. So as Captain Kidd, which is what he calls himself, he goes to investigate this place at the behest of this stranger that he meets outside the bathroom at the bar. And I say meets in quotes because I'm pretty sure that he has met her. Anyways, he follows somebody to Supreme Lawn and Garden Supply Company. And he believes, because of what she's told him, that Supreme Lawn and Garden is run by an evil... I think it's an organization from what when she talks about the serpent later on. I don't think it's just one person. This guy is the head of Supreme Lawn and Garden Supply. But he goes in there, tries to investigate to see what kind of shenanigans are going on. And he can't find anything. So he leaves. As he leaves, the mysterious stranger shows back up, and she pretty much tells him, you know, quit playing around, like, I know who you are, because he's like, I'm Captain Kidd, and she calls him by his real name. And they have a little chat about this lawn and garden supply company and how she believes that they have this plan to, I guess, control humanity. And that's kind of where the issue ends. Although, I guess I should say, she somehow thinks it's 1986.
Yes, and she's dressed total 80s.
Total 80s.
Get up.
Yes. Yes. So, Jack, since this was your favorite book of the week, what are your thoughts on this?
Out of the three, it was my least favorite. I did not dislike this. I enjoyed it. But I don't know. There was nothing really for me to grab onto to love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I want to keep reading it, but I'm just, yeah, I just didn't fall in love with the first issue. But one thing I did like that I think he sort of glossed over was the scene where he saw, I think her name is Halea, the 80s superhero-like yes. girl. The bridge scene.
Yes.
Where the whole issue ends with this bridge scene and lightning, I think lightning strikes the bridge. And I love the way he goes to try to, he does what a superhero does. If a bridge is clapping, there's cars on it. He goes and he tries to stabilize it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't, it seems like what he doesn't like grab it in the right place or something. And, yeah. and he says, it's getting heavier. Maybe I could save some people if I actually knew some physics. Now they're all going to die because I'm too stupid.
Right.
I thought that was an awesome scene, though, because that's sort of like the problems real people would have, like, if you actually had superpowers. Like, you know, Captain America throws a shield, and no matter what he does with it, it always comes back to him. But it's like, that's not how it works. There's physics involved. And as soon as, like, the reality is, as soon as you sling that thing, it's probably going to be with like your super strength, it's going to be a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you lost your shield.
Sure.
So anyways, I just thought that was a cool scene. So he's trying to stabilize the bridge, and it's like he's not in the right place, so it's crumbling around him and getting too heavy until Halea comes and helps him figure it out.
Ronnie, what'd you think of this issue?
I liked it. It wasn't a blown away issue by no means, but I thought like some of the scenes that you guys talked about, like the bridge scene where, you know, he's still just he's a kid, but a normal brain, you know, where he's not super smart or whatever. And that part was very interesting because it's like Jack said, it's just a normal person that has superpowers now.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole 80s thing, cliffhanger at the end of where she still thinks it's the 80s. I can see where it's going to go somewhere interesting. But, I don't know, there were some real slow parts for me as well. And some parts that I was just like, WTH, you know. But I'd say out of the three this week, that it's probably my middle one.
Interesting. Okay, so it's also my middle one. I will say this, though. There were a couple things that I didn't catch until the end of the issue. He refers to her as Miss 80s in a couple panels.
Right.
Which I didn't catch at all about, you know, Jack, you were talking about her 80s getup. I didn't catch that until that last panel when she says, you know, we have to stop this evil company before 1986. And I was like, oh, that's why she's Miss 80s. Like, she's stuck right. in some kind of time loop. But then I also remember there's a scene where he goes to visit his dad. Like, he goes home. I guess he lives with his dad, maybe. And they're talking about, you know, going out and having dinner. And he kind of reminisces a little bit about his powers and about his dad at the same time. And you see that picture of him and his parents on his 15th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And that is June 7th, 1986.
Yeah.
So yeah. I didn't even catch that on my first reading. I was like, okay, he's just kind of thinking back. But the way the book ends has me thinking like there has to be a little bit more to this than we're actually seeing.
Yeah. Well, he also asked the bartender. He asked her if you know that woman who comes in dressed like the 80s.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah. Didn't she have like a rush or some kind of shirt too?
I don't know. She just
says relax.
She looks straight out of relax.
Okay, there you go.
She looks straight out of Jim and the Holograms.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know.
Now she mentioned something that made it sound. I'm trying to find it, but it sounded like they have allies.
Yeah, she did mention somebody else in this issue. I guess.
Allies, but the clock is running out. If we don't win this war soon, all that good would be lost. Does that mean there's other people like them?
Well, surely there's more superheroes, right? You can't just have these two, it seems. Like, whenever you have a comic with heroes, like, it's either going to be based on this, centered on this one person and talking about their powers, and maybe they're the only one, right? Or they're the first one. I don't know if you guys ever read, like, Ultraverse back in the day, but that's kind of how Ultraverse kind of started expanding universe. They presented you with one person that had superpowers, and then you start learning that the same thing that gave this person powers gave other people powers, and so you'd meet them along the way. And it seems like that to me in this book as well. So you have this guy, you have Captain Kidd, you have Miss 80s, and I'm sure there are others.
And then you wind up like Marvel with about 50,000 superheroes.
Well, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you could easily not have that.
And they all live in New York.
Yes, good point.
My question is, though, do they have allies in 2016 or is there allies in 1986?
Right.
Sure.
Where she thinks she's still at.
So this would be an interesting twist. What if he's not actually 45? What if he's actually 15 with superpowers? Or however old? 15 to 20?
And he projects himself to be 45?
Yeah, but he's got some kind of psychosis.
I thought about that too.
Yeah.
That could be
so
cool.
So maybe it's actually like reverse?
Yeah, like it is like Shazam, but in his mind it's the total opposite.
Right, yeah.
You know, so I could be way off on that, but I think that'd be a cool concept to see.
Right, yep.
I really like this book, though. Obviously not as much as I love Black Eyed Kids, but I thought this was a really good first issue. I think the problem with this first issue is kind of the same as what we saw in our missing Second Sight episode that we recorded, in that the first issue is just a lot of setup.
Yeah.
And this issue is very much the same. And, you know, with Second Sight, you don't really kick into things till the end of the second or even into the third issue. And it seems to me like this is kind of where this book is going to go as well. It's going to take a few issues to really get the story rolling, because there's obviously a lot of things that we need to learn before we can get to that story.
Right. And it's Mark Waid, so you knew that there's going to be a slow burn. Like the detail stuff anyways, you know.
Well, you know, I never really understood that, because it seems like in the comic industry, if you know, you go into this, you know, we all know that number ones are the top seller. That's why all the publishers are constantly putting out new number ones nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that ahead of time, why wouldn't you try as hard as you could to make that first issue really, you know, capture everything? Because that's where you need to hook your readers, right?
I could see your point, but at the same time, I think with indie publishers, I think a lot of these guys are going indie because they want to tell stories that they want to tell and they enjoy
the way
telling.
They want to do it.
Yeah, and not so much about selling.
Yeah,
right. And like and tip their hat too soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a good point. A guy like Mark Waid, he's not writing for Aftershock to get rich.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not got nothing to prove, right? He's been in the business for forever.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's an interesting topic. We can discuss it at some point. I don't mind. I think that would be fun.
Cool. Yep, that would be fun.
Are we going to do ratings?
Yeah, let's rate this.
Go for it.
Go first.
So I'm gonna say, I guess out of five, three out of five.
I think it's a pretty good score.
Think so? Well, I mean, that's like the right in the middle. And that's how this was for me. It was sort of like average. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it.
So as a first issue, though, are you, I'm assuming, not inclined to pick the second one up?
No, I would pick up the second one. But I mean, if it moseyed on like this for the entire arc, I would probably drop it.
Sure.
But right. I mean, I saw enough that I want to at least get the next issue or next couple issues.
Right. Ronnie, you're up.
I'm probably gonna go with a 4, honestly.
Wow.
Just because the art in it, I thought, really went with the whole vibe. Like, there was a couple times, like when he was old, it kind of changed art style to when they were young and actually doing super stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like a dramatic change, but you can still tell. And then, you know, it's Mark Waid, and it's a slow burn thing, and I'm hooked enough that I'm going to at least continue it, so.
Sure. I'm glad you brought up the art, because that's one thing we didn't discuss. So I'll briefly say that I'm a big fan of, like, Jupiter Circle. I don't know if you guys have read that. It's Mark Miller and Wilfredo Torres, who's doing this book. And a lot of this book kind of is reminiscent to me of Jupiter Circle. And if that's the angle that they're going to take, then I'm all for it, because I love that book so much. So
yeah.
I'm not going to go. I think, are we doing half stars or are we doing whole stars?
I need halves.
Okay, cool. We'll do halves.
I can't commit.
I'm going to go right in the middle of you guys. I'll do 3.5. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to the next one. But there was something missing. And I think that something missing will be seen in the next issue, or maybe the issue after. But I think once the first arc is resolved, we'll definitely get this book rolling.
Right.
Awesome. Cool. Let's go to the next one. American Monster, number 4. It's written by Brian Azzarello, whom I love, let me just say.
Yeah.
And Wando, doing art and letters, who I double love.
Yeah, and I met him at Heroes Con, and he seemed like a really cool guy.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to pick this one up?
Go for
Jack?
It. No. You want me to, huh?
Yeah, you picked this
one. So, I mean, so this is going to be a little bit hard for me because, I first of all, I love reading every single issue of this. It's really interesting, and the character interactions are really interesting. But it feels like from through the 4 issues, when I think back on it, it's like not really much has happened. Like,
people, I'm glad you say that.
That's probably why you're going to say this was your least favorite.
You're absolutely right.
And I agree with you. Well, the recap, and I'll keep it really brief, but there's a guy that almost looks like a monster, hence the name of the comic, American Monster. But the reason he looks this way is because his face is burnt. It's completely red, and I assume, I don't know if we've seen his hands or whatever. Oh, I think, yeah, we have.
Yeah.
I think his whole body is just burnt, chiseled, and, you know, burnt to the core. So he looks like a monster, and everywhere he goes, there's issues about, you can't tell if it's him just being smug or he's self-conscious, but it's always an issue the way he looks. But he's in a small town, and he's trying to find answers to something that we don't, through 4 issues, we still don't know exactly what he's trying to find answers to. And he's planning to kill a bunch of people until he finds those answers. And really, through 4 issues, that's all I could figure out that's really happened. There's little things going on, and I know one person's died, right?
Sure.
And
there's also a few different stories going on, because you've got, like, the kids.
Yeah.
Who are kind of related to the story, but not really. Sure. Like, they have their own antics. And then, like, all the adults pretty much are their own thing. And then you have the quote-unquote monster.
Yeah.
Who has his own story as well. Anyways, continue.
And there's so one of the main characters is, there's a girl named Snow. And she has a group of, like, 5 or 6 friends that are kind of, maybe they're late teens or maybe early 20s. But they're smoking weed, you know, drinking, kind of hanging out, just not really doing much most of the time. But her dad, it turns out, is another guy, like, he's connected somehow to the Monster Face guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because in issue two, we find out that they both have the same tattoo. There's a tattoo on both of their backs that looks like lightning, and they're both big guys, right?
Yep.
But this guy, he's not, you know, he's not all burnt. He looks normal, but he, you know, he lives out in the woods, and he's a, you know, rough guy skinning a deer. And there's this whole drama thing because his dog dies. right.
Yeah. Now, which I hope we get to talk about the whole series at some point, because this has been very interesting.
Yeah.
To say the least. But continue.
So issue four, I guess the thing that seemed most, one of the things that seemed most notable to me is he has this conversation with a guy named Omar, who I think we see in an earlier issue, but he's a mechanic. Is that the mechanic he went to have his car fixed?
Yeah.
Okay. And we didn't know that when we first met him. They seemed like just a random mechanic, but yeah. We do. And they had this long conversation, and it seems like that, because we've seen a couple flashbacks of something that looks like a military mission, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in the Middle East or somewhere, I'm guessing.
Yep.
And I think maybe somebody wears has a bomb strapped to him, and there's an explosion. I'm guessing right now. I don't really know, but I'm thinking that's how he got burnt. But Omar, they have this conversation. It seems like they were in this situation together. Because they're going back and forth. They don't seem like they really get along that well, but they have some shared experience, and he seems to know what Monster Face guy's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, correct me if I read this wrong, but I think he sort of communicates that he lost somebody in that same event. Because when he's talking to him, he says, you know, if it gets too hard for you, you can just kill yourself. But what it took for me, no matter what I do, they'll never come back.
Yep.
Now, what does that mean? Do you know?
No, but I kind of got the same impression as you did. It seems that they both lost someone dear because of this.
Yeah. Looks like he lost somebody, whereas the other guy kind of lost himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's a monster now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's another scene where there's a police officer investigating, I guess he's investigating the Snow's dad. His dog got shot, right?
Yep.
And he winds up trespassing on, do you know his name? The dad guy?
I can't remember his name now.
And he's sort of crazy. Anyways, the cops...
He's very crazy.
Yeah. The cops on his property trying to figure out what happened to this dog. And so the guy's like, hey, this is, you know, my private property. I don't care. It's a cop. I'm going to start shooting at him.
Mm-hmm.
So he shoots at the guy. I got the impression he didn't try to hit him, just tried to scare him.
Felix Black, then, that's his name.
Who?
Felix Black.
Felix Black, there you go. That sounds right. And then the story sort of ends with all the... And I guess here's what you mean by it. There's other sort of side stories going on. But Snow has a friend named Dante that seems like he's really into her. And yeah. He's kind of digging on her, and they're sort of hanging out, smoking weed, playing video games. And then the rest of their friends show up, and
The friend she's hanging out with is Candy.
Ah, Candy, right. Dante is the friend that shows up.
Yeah.
And he's a lot more, you know, he's bigger, he's handsome, and they end up getting it on in some back room of this trailer and with Dante, and Candy's jealous. Oh, and right at the end, there's a bar, you know, Monster Face guy wants to buy a bar. I don't know why he wants to buy a bar. So I know that's a horrible recap because it sounds like I just talked a bunch and nothing happened, but that's kind of how I felt reading this.
Yeah, you know what? Like, this is like the comic version of Seinfeld. So I totally envy you, and I think you did a great job, because it's very hard to recap this issue. And to be honest, it's very hard to recap this whole series, because you're right. In four issues, not much has really happened.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's things going on. Like, it's not like there's nothing happening, but it's just kind of like you're living through a day with these people, and that's
right.
Really all it is.
And the central story just hasn't developed.
Right. Right.
It's called American Monster, and the American Monster is trying to figure something out, and he hasn't figured anything out thus far.
Well, I think that's kind of a jump, though. Because to me, at least, it seems kind of obvious that this guy isn't necessarily the monster. I think just American Monster, it's like American Psycho, right? Like, it's just talking about Americans who are monsters. Because really, everyone in this book is completely effed up.
Right.
Right.
There's
not one sane person in here.
When I read this, I was initially trying to figure out, okay, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And Snow's dad seemed like a bad guy. And I thought, okay, maybe this American Monster guy, he's going to be a good guy because he looks so bad, you know? But they all seem like kind of people you don't want to spend time with.
Yeah. It's like Sons of Anarchy, where there is no good guys or bad guys, really.
Yeah.
It's just everybody screwed up.
Except the kids. They seem kind of cool, don't they? I mean, they don't have much motivation in their life, but they're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm very curious to see where this is going.
Yeah.
And I don't know how well this is doing. Like I said, I love Azzarello and I love Wando. And, like, visually, this book looks awesome. I enjoy reading it. But as soon as I'm done with the issue, I'm like, well, so, like, what now?
Yeah.
Right? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but at some point, there's got to be some kind of payoff.
Yeah.
You know, and right now, I'm just not seeing it.
It feels like there will be, though.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's going somewhere.
Who was the guy that Candy went to go see after he caught Dante and Snow? Or do we not know who that guy is?
I don't think we know who that guy.
Okay. Because remember he had that, they wrote I Love Dick on his forehead?
Yeah.
And then I guess he leaves and shows up at this guy's house. And to me, the dude seemed like a creeper. I thought he was a pedophile. But I don't know who he is, so I could be wrong.
Is he making magic mushrooms?
No, I don't think he was. Ronnie, any thoughts on this book?
To me, besides what you guys already said, to me, I just felt like I was on cruise control reading it. Really, there's nothing that really yanked out and grabbed me, really. Yep. It was just kind of meh from start to finish. And hopefully it picks up, but you know, we're four issues deep in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just spinning our wheels in the mud, it seems like.
Yep, I agree. You know what we need? We need to come up with our own Tamos, because we can't Tamo this puppy.
Right.
Anyways, let's do give it a rating. If you're listening to this and you've never listened to Only the Valiant, then you have no idea what we're talking about, so it's fine. Let's go ahead and rate it. I'll go first this time. I'll give this a 3. Not because I don't want to rate it higher. It's just I want the story. I want to know what's happening. The talent is a 4-star talent at least. But to me, it's just dragging enough where it's knocking it down to a 3.
Sounds good.
Ronnie, you're next.
Actually, I'm going to be a little harsher.
Ooh.
And I'm going to do a 2.5 because, like I said, when I read it, I was just on cruise control and from cover to cover. And 4 issues in, I should feel one way or another about it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I'm just teetering on I like it, I don't care. I like it, I don't care. So
that's fair enough. Jack?
I'm going to give it a 4. And the reason I'm going to go that high, even though I agree with you that it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere, is because I find myself really interested page to page. I like the characters.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's important to me in comics is character development. And it can be extremely action-packed and exciting. And if I don't remember who the characters are or relate to them or find them interesting in some way, then I don't enjoy this story. And I think the way this is written, even though nothing's happening on a grand scale, even the, like the interactions with the kids, the things they're talking about and doing, or the cop going on, you know, cop interacting with the Snow's dad. All that stuff was, you know, interesting to me all throughout reading it. So I'll go higher, but I mean, I agree with you guys. If it doesn't turn into something, if this doesn't end up going somewhere soon, my rating probably start dropping.
Well, and I would assume the next issue ends the arc, right? Issue 5?
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume so.
Yeah. So maybe there'll be some kind of payoff by the next one. And, I mean, to be fair to this book, this may be one of those books where it's more about characters than story. And maybe my issue with it is I'm just not reading it that way. And maybe I should. Because the characters are great. Like, they're all so messed up, it's really fun to read.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next one. Black Eyed Kids, number 4. Written by Joe Pruitt. Art by Simon Kudrunsky. Colors by Guy Major. And letters by Marshall Dillon. So, Ronnie?
Yes?
Do you want to kick this one off?
Sure. You guys know how many comic books I read. This book is my favorite one, I would say, out of all publishers and everything.
Wow.
Because 4 issues in, and there hasn't been a miss yet, honestly.
This is your number one.
This is probably my number one, yeah. If I had to gun to my head or a Black Eyed Kid in front of me, yeah, this would be the one I'd pick. This issue also felt to me like an episode of The Walking Dead, kind of, because a lot of crazy stuff happened, and there's also character development. We see the black police officer at the beginning, who's obviously had a rough day. But it really doesn't, I mean, it kind of flashes back to how he comes home and pours him a drink, and he's talking to his wife who isn't there, and then he realizes she's there, or she isn't there. Mm-hmm. And then we go to the hospital, where the 3 black-eyed kids are with his sister.
Yep.
With Michael's sister, right? And yes. His name, Michael? Okay.
What's her name? Leslie, right?
Or Riley.
Riley.
Riley's the girl that's in a coma.
Yeah, Riley.
And then the ringleader, it's not the creepy mastermind kid, right? It's just the leader of these 3.
Yeah, he's the leader of these 3.
And these are the 3 that got, these are the kids that got Michael in like the first issue, right?
Yes.
And now Michael's with them.
Correct.
And so they're trying to talk Michael into killing Riley and joining or going all the way dark, I guess.
Yes. Well, right, so that's part of the thing, right? They need to kill their whole family to be part of the cool kids.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He says, let your human side fade. Embrace your destiny. Join your new family. Your biological family must die so that you can be reborn.
There you go. And then good old dad, you know, comes in and saves the day. Or not really saves the day, but... What? There's this little nurse panel right here. The little 3 panels.
Yeah.
I didn't know where you're going. That just, like, stuck out to me. Like, it didn't really matter.
It confused me for a while. I looked back and forth with that.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's when...
I know it's the hospital security guard, but...
Yeah, when he gets locked up in a closet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just don't know who the older black-eyed kid is that killed him. Right?
I thought he was just one of the kids that was with Michael.
Yeah, I think I think he walked out of the room.
Okay. Because he seems like he's drawn older, like teenage-ish.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I was confused a little bit.
I could see that.
I had to look through those panels a couple times to figure out what was going on there.
I want you to stop your recap, and the only reason I want you to stop it is because you caught something, and I want to discuss that in just a minute.
Okay.
The reference that you caught. But this issue, I will say, is also my favorite. This book is also definitely my favorite Aftershock. It's not my favorite of all publishers, but I'm definitely putting it in my top 10, maybe even top 5. Yeah. I think the thing that is really striking about this book, Joe Perrot's writing's great, so let me preface by saying that, but visually, I could just look at the panels and not even read what's going on.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Freaking understand what's happening.
Right.
And I think that says a lot for the artist when you can do that. So once you put words on top of that, it really seals the deal for me. Oh, with that said, back to the writing, Joe Pruitt's writing is freaking awesome. The way that these pages are laid out is fantastic. The story is amazing. There's nothing wrong with this book. Absolutely nothing wrong with this book. This is the highlight of my day whenever this book comes out.
Agreed.
I freaking love it. Jack?
I think I know what your rating's going to be.
Wow.
I'm totally with you. And I you know, there when you're reading comic books, there's good comic art. Mm-hmm. And that looks nice and it does everything it's supposed to do. And then there's just stuff that really stands out and grabs your attention. And this book to me is like that. And it's the way it's drawn. It's the perspective that's used in certain panels and the dark, you know, overtones throughout the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find myself, you know, every time I read an issue of this, I read through it and I'm like, oh, that was good. But then when I start thinking about it and talking with you guys about it, I like it even more. Like it jogs things that I didn't maybe catch initially.
Sure.
Yep, agreed. Yep.
I mean, there's some great stuff on here. Like when they cut back to the hospital and Michael's holding the knife.
Yep.
And, you know, his dad's like, Michael, don't do this. Like, this is not who you are. And you see that same panel from like a few different points of view.
Yeah,
And then it cuts to Riley, and it cuts to Michael's dad's girlfriend. I think it's his girlfriend, right? Like, there's so much emotion and so much suspense in that, right? And I think that's what this book does really well. It keeps you, like, wanting to go immediately to the next panel to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But there's something about the way that the art is done that you just kind of want to stare at each panel for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes the build-up even worse because you're like, I have to keep staring at this panel, but I must go to the next one.
You know?
And I think that's what makes this book really, really good. There's just a lot of that throughout this series.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, my favorite line of this is when she pulls out the crucifix.
Oh, yeah.
She's stay back. And the kids are like, we aren't vampires, fool. That was the best thing ever.
Now, but... They say that, and then she stabs him with it, and it seems like she kills him.
Yes.
Yep. Is that how you? I mean, is that because she stabbed him in the neck, or because she had a crucifix?
I guess that's kind of up in the air, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I took it just because she stabbed him right into the neck, but now that you say that, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it could easily be the crucifix, but also, like, I'm pretty sure she severed his spine, so that would kill him. Well, I would think.
Well, haven't we seen them, like, get shot at and stuff, and then they kill him?
Right.
Yeah, but shot at's a little different. It's like when it's like in Walking Dead. You know, Ronnie brought up the Walking Dead earlier.
Right.
You can shoot those zombies anywhere, and they don't die until you shoot them in the head. So maybe this is kind of the same thing.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
But I can see where you're thinking about it. I mean, because, you know, it's like we assume that they're demonic. So, you know, something of the crucifix would.
Well, she seemed like she had, like she was thinking something. Like even when they said, hey, we're not vampires, that doesn't do anything to us.
Yeah, and she was still, like, well, that's still fine by me.
Right.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, that's fine by me. I'll just stab your ass in the neck.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a hospital, why, if you just wanted to... you know, stab him in the neck. It seems like you have plenty of other scalpels or something laying around that you could use it with.
Absolutely. I'm still going with my alien theory. So these are brain parasite aliens, and so that's why they die. She severed the spine. They can't communicate with the body. They're dead.
Well, that's solid, too.
I hope we never find out if they're aliens or not, though. Like, to be honest.
Right.
But whatever.
I think I'm changing my opinion. I think this is something demonic. I'm going to take the crucifix as a lead until I see something else.
I'd be totally down for that, too. But immediately after that, we meet a new / not really new character.
Old Man Logan.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to talk a little bit about that, Ronnie?
Sure, I can.
Go for it.
All hell breaks loose after she stabs him in the neck, or one of them in the neck. So then Jim and they get Riley out of there, and then they see the guy in the doorway, and actually it's the guy that killed the guard, right? The one that snuck off and killed the guard?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see hands and snap of the neck, and then Old Man Logan shows up, which we have seen in the Aftershock Genesis short story, mm-hmm. Black Eye Kids. And then, obviously, he's killed a lot of them because, you know, he's the badass that that this book needed, you know? I mean, this book's perfect anyway, but, you know, he's coming in and kicking ass and taking names, mm-hmm. or chewing bubble gum, whatever. He broke his neck right there, but he still has to cut off his head.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Maybe it has to be complete separation of the head.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
And so he's buying time for Jim and his girlfriend to get Riley out. And he asks who he is, but, you know, we still don't know his name.
Right.
Dude, let me tell you something. Did you guys ever watch the Chappelle Show?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know the I'm Rick James bitch thing?
Yep, right.
So I was reading this, and when he's like, don't worry about it, that's exactly what came to my head. I was like, I'm Rick James, bitch. Anyways, sorry to derail this podcast.
Yeah.
Continue.
I'm sure that's exactly how Joe was intending to write it, too.
No, but they make it out of, they see that there's more coming, and so he leads them outside.
Yeah.
And they're getting away. And as soon as they're walking out of the emergency room, isn't the black officer that we see at the beginning walking into the emergency room because he got the call?
Yes, because he got the call.
Right. So I, just like I said when we read Genesis, that this guy has to show up later because it's not just like a one-off story to promote it. I still feel that the officer is going to be a major player later too.
I definitely agree. I don't think he would have been introduced if he wasn't going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
You want me to recap Genesis real quick? Because I just reread this.
Yeah, go for it.
Or were you going to, Ronnie?
No, go for it.
And I'll make it fast. But so the guy that Ronnie's talking about that shows up at the end of this in this issue and saves the day in Genesis, which was Genesis before any issue of Black Eyed Kids? Okay. Because I read it after 2, I think.
I thought it came out between 1 and 2, but
You know what? Yeah, you might be right. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Yeah. So, anyways, the whole issue, it's just a mini story about Black Eyed Kids, and it's the same guy, and he's out in a remote cabin, nobody but himself, and he looks like he's got a ponytail, and he's sort of a lumberjack looking dude, and he's out there like chopping wood and eating jerky or whatever people do out there. And a random guy walks up wearing, I think, like ski goggles, and he says his car's broke down and his cell phone's dead and he needs to use a phone. and this lumberjack dude is kind of suspicious, but he lets the guy in anyways because, you know, that's always the right thing to do in a horror story.
Sure.
So now this guy doesn't have black eyes, by the way, but they have some, you know, they talk for a while, and I guess the lumberjack guy is still suspicious, so he cuts the guy's hand, mm-hmm. and his eyes turn black, which I didn't catch the first time, but when I reread it, I thought that was interesting. Like, something about, I don't know if cutting his hand made his eyes turn black or just because he was, you know, found okay. guilty that he let him turn black, but
sure.
Something was going on there. So anyways, he kills that black-eyed kid, and the reason he was suspicious is because he looked out the window and he saw another black-eyed kid out in the distance, like he's waiting for him. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he kills the guy in his house. He goes outside and he tells the black-eyed kids outside that they're not welcome. And one, and this was an awesome scene, but one is a little girl, and he says to her, and she's got black eyes as well, but he says to her, "I love you, Michelle. Daddy misses you." And then he packs up all his stuff and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he burn the cabin, or no?
Yeah. Okay. I think you're right.
And so obviously he's going to the hospital.
Yeah.
Yep.
And no. He didn't burn the cabin. He left a note on the door that says, I don't have the actual issue in front of me right now, but I thought he left a
not
note.
Not welcome here or something like that?
Yeah.
So Genesis came out between 1 and 2. You were right.
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha. Yeah.
So the question is, with old man Logan here, how many black-eyed kids has he killed since from the cabin to the hospital?
Well, actually, you know what my question is how does he know Michael's mom?
Yeah. He said he knows her, right?
Yeah, he said he knows her, and he was friends with her parents.
Right.
So he's definitely older.
Yeah.
But, like, what's her connection? Because her other ex-husband... Or her ex-husband that we met, I think, in issue 1 or 2, he's the one that was investigating Black Eyed Kids.
Right.
Right? Didn't he have that website?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, what's the deal with her? Why is everyone around her connected to these kids? That's a little weird.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. This guy knows something. We don't know what he knows yet, but...
But I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, I can't either.
Let's rate this comic. I'll go ahead and go first because you can already tell. This is a 5 out of 5 for me. This book is amazing. And if you read comics and you don't read this book, then you just hate comics.
Shame on you.
Shame on you. Ronnie?
I am going to go 5 out of 5 as well. Yeah. But I like it because it's stayed consistently great through all 4 issues, art, writing, the whole 9 yards. And it's just like you, even if it didn't have the word bubbles in it, you could still tell what was going on. Mm-hmm. Plus, is like a throwback to Genesis, to where we get that little nugget of continuity in Black Eyed Kids, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. everything that we've read so far is happening for a reason, yeah. or why we read it. Nothing's throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was kind of leaning, like, when Jack brought it up about the crucifix, I was like, yeah, because she could have grabbed a scalpel or anything else, but... So, yeah. 5 out of 5 for me.
Jack?
I'm going to say... 5 out of 5. See, for me, a 5 means, I mean, that's the very top score. That means it just absolutely cannot get any better.
Sure.
And while this was awesome, I got to say 4.5.
That's still a damn good score.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a damn good score.
I got to save my 5s for like something that's just mind-blowing.
Hey, that's
and this
that's
is close.
Enough.
It's
that's
just not
enough.
Quite there.
I want to bring up very quickly before we wrap up. I did watch 2 quote-unquote movies about black-eyed kids in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the names of them, When I find them, I'll put them in the show notes and I'll send them to you guys. Okay. But they're both available on Amazon Prime Video.
Okay.
So if you have that, you can watch it for free. Cool. One was absolutely terrible, and the other one was only mildly bad.
Was the one that was absolutely terrible the one that we talked about in the Black Eyed Kids episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's kind of set up like the Blair Witch Project, sort of.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the one that's only mildly bad, what is it called? In case we want to watch it.
Mildly bad Black Eyed Kids?
Yeah. No, if I remember correctly, it doesn't have Black Eyed Kids in the title. Okay. And so I can't remember how I found it. But it's a girl who's a YouTube star. Like, she has tons of followers on YouTube. And it's just pretty much her kind of, like, solving mysteries, kind of, on her YouTube channel. So it's set up very much like that. Like, there's a camera crew following her on this journey. And her new journey that she wants to investigate is Black Eyed Kids. And it's set in Seattle, which is supposed to be the hot spot for Black Eyed Kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so she goes and she finds Black Eyed Kids, and there's all kinds of shenanigans going on. But she ends up going to this house where the Black Eyed Kids live. And there's a couple twists. She does survive. But yeah, it was fine. I don't like that type of movie.
Where it's
just like the shaky cam thing. So here's what I want. I want somebody to make a movie.
And we have a script.
There's a script. Just go to aftershockcomics.com and look up Black Eyed Kids. There's a script. This would make a freaking awesome movie.
Yeah. And
considering there are no good movies about Black Eyed Kids.
Or a TV show,
not
even.
Really,
Yeah, TV. I'd be good with a TV show. Miniseries, whatever. One season.
Yep.
I'm fine with that.
It does feel like it could go in the direction of sort of a Walking Dead, where the world is just saturated with these black-eyed kids.
And like Martin was saying, like with The Walking Dead, they don't know how it started, and they never talk about it. I mean, they try to figure out, but then it quickly gets blown under the rug. So that's another thing that can be done, is like nobody knows how Black Eyed Kids are here, just dealing with them.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's not important.
Man, I want to know, though.
See, like, I've talked about this before in other podcasts. I'm a huge zombie movie lover, regardless of how bad and terrible a lot of zombie movies are. Mm-hmm. And to me, some of the best zombie movies don't give you how the outbreak started.
Right. Yeah, right.
Right. Well, it's just about how people react to this. So that's why I like this book. This book does a lot of that. Like, you don't know where these kids come from. You don't know anything about them. But you just kind of go along for the ride, and it's freaking awesome. So
right. Now, me and my wife watch The Walking Dead, and we like it at this point, it's not really even about the zombies. It's about the tribal, like, warfare and surviving in this new world and the way people interact when society kind of breaks down. But Black Eyed Kids, to me, I don't want it just to be that. I think I want it to be – I want there to be more – I expect more depth out of the Black Eyed Kids than I do out of zombies. You know?
I feel like there's
a story there that I want to get to.
Totally. Right.
I still can't find the other one, but the one that's really terrible is called Black Eyed Children, Let Me In.
Excellent.
So if you want to look up a bad movie, go for it.
Well, and the bad thing was, like, there's a twist at the end, like, and it's this movie was shot for like $50, I promise you.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, but like, there's a twist at the end, like, why couldn't you do that halfway through the movie and made this at least somewhat watchable?
Right.
Anyways, let's wrap this podcast up.
Cool.
Sounds good.
This has been the Aftershock Central Podcast. With Ronnie, Jack, and myself. You can find us all on Twitter. Ronnie's at Ronbar316. Jack is at Jack Sutherland. I am at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. You can email us hello@nerdlegion.com. And, of course, we're all on the Aftershock Comics fan group on Facebook. So next week we'll be talking about Animosity number one. I know I'm very much looking forward to that. I'll be finished with Zoo by then. I'm just kidding. Anyways, until the next time, guys, you all have a pleasant evening. Don't let the black-eyed kids in.